political affiliations or contributions.
Log Talk Radio.
May 17th, 2011, Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. You're on live with Dr. C. Robert Jones, the third. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Another day, another dollar, maybe. Here we are, back again. Tonight's going to be an interesting show, I think. Because tonight we're going to talk about, we're going to debate whether or not Barack Hussein Obama is the worst president in the United States. In the history of the United States. We're going to go ahead and debate that. Now, yes, it's true that Mr. Obama's only been in office for a little over 2 years. But during the course of that 2 years, 44 million Americans now live on the public dole. 44 million Americans live on food stamps. It's an approximate number. Obama promised transparency on every bill signed into law. This has not occurred under any stretch of the imagination. He doesn't even come close. Take a listen. Take a listen to this clip. You'll see exactly what I mean.
Variations of contributions. What impact does that have on that request for proposal?
I want to make very clear, Congressman West, 2 points. One, to the extent that you're taking me into a discussion of the details of the draft executive order, I don't feel comfortable speaking, but I think I can still address the point.
But why are you here, sir?
I think I can address the point. As soon as I heard the acronym RFP, I realized that you do have experience in this area, and that's helpful.
Absolutely.
The contracting officer who's awarding that contract will never take into account political contributions, but the public may want to know. The contracting officer will not take that information into account. The only thing that they will take into account are the factors in the RFP. The question isn't, is it going to be a factor in the selection? The question is, does the public have the right to know what contributions were made by contractors?
But what bearing does that have on the request for proposal for someone to come in and provide services for the Department of Defense, their political contributions?
So let me go ahead and cut this short, explain to you what's happening here, because I know a lot of you watch the news, and you've probably seen this clip on Fox. The guy didn't answer the question. And the Honorable Mr. Gordon, who you heard speaking, answering or not answering the question for Representative Alan West, simply didn't answer the question. And he stated that he shouldn't have to answer the question. And that there are certain things that the administration does, certain conversations they have, that shouldn't be revealed to the American public. That the American public have no business hearing about. So the whole thing, the whole issue of transparency is out the window. Blog 11, 44 million more than in 2008. You know what? That's a very good question. My latest figures, the figures that I researched today before doing the show, indicate 44 million. And that number was listed as an approximate number. Could be slightly less, and it could be slightly more. And that is as of 2011. Now, there is no transparency. None, mind you. The government posted the biggest monthly deficit in history in February 2011. The biggest monthly deficit in history. Now, folks, this is something that cannot be blamed on George W. Bush. Is Barack Obama the worst president ever? At least, to be fair, at this point in his presidency. This question doesn't seem to be very eye-opening because all of Obama's supporters have finally realized that his "yes, we can" promises were basically a bunch of lies. Obama has only kept one promise so far. Well, two, the healthcare debacle, two promises, and the lifting of gays serving openly in the military. Both I would consider to be a detriment to both the military and to our population as a whole. Is Obama the worst president in history? Well, this is the question that's being bounced around between all the news sources and all the politicians around the globe are asking this question. Just being nominated as the worst president ever, it shows you just how much of a failure Obama has been since he's been president. There is a poll on a very popular website right now that has 93% of the voters saying Obama is the worst president ever. The other vote getter, shockingly, is Jimmy Carter with 7% of the vote. So at this stage of Barack Obama's presidency, he has been found wanting by the majority of the American people. Another poll was conducted earlier today that speaks to the nature of America's apathy, that of America's lack of faith in this government. Obama was supposed to bring us all together. This "yes, we can" platitude, the good feelings. We're all going to get along. We're all going to get together. There were no red states, no blue states, only the United States of America. That's what it was all about, right? And the talk of all the rhetoric, all the partisanship, Obama was going to bridge that gap. Baby Jesus, the anointed one, Barack Obama, was supposed to bridge that gap and usher in an era of a new style of politics. I guess that would be the case if America, Democrats, some Democrats and most Republicans rolled over and gave him every single thing he wanted in order to turn the United States from being the United States of America, an exceptional country, to Greece, perhaps, or Soviet Russia. Now, Let's move on to number four. Number three was the government posted the biggest monthly deficit in history in February 2011. Number four, the government has the biggest federal deficit in the history of this country, $14 trillion and growing. $14 trillion. Now, I know a lot of folks are going to go ahead and say, well, it's not Barack Obama's fault. He, after all, he inherited this mess. Right? He inherited all of this. He's blameless. He inherited a big mess, and he's trying to fix it. This is what my so-called friends tell me. My black brothers and sisters, they'll say, he's trying. He's doing his best. He's, after all, he's the first black president of the United States. He's doing the best he can. He inherited this mess from Bush. And now I don't even know how to respond to that anymore. There is no response. I was watching a little bit of a documentary from the History Channel called The Third Reich. I watched the first installment of The Third Reich is The Rise. And then the second installment, they're both 2 hours each, is called The Fall. Now, during the rise of the Third Reich, Hitler assumes power. He becomes chancellor. At a time when the country is really down, there's no food, the factories are closed, people are basically in a free fall. And Hitler comes in and he opens the factories, he nationalizes everything. It sounds starting to sound familiar. People start feeling good. They start feeling good again because Hitler has done something for the people. His speeches mesmerize folks. People are saying he is the Messiah. He has come to save us. And we all know how that ends. We all know how the story ends when the citizens of a country begin to believe that their government leaders are gods or somehow above normal human beings. We all know how the story ends. Don't we? Now, Blog writes in the chat room. Let's see what Blog is writing here. The problem is both parties is not just one of the Republicans have for 1,000 years were the ones hiring 10-year-olds and poisoning people. Not sure what that means exactly. I guess maybe he'll explain that one later. Let's move on. America has the highest employment rate at this time since the Great Depression, and Obama said that, he told us all that, if we passed his stimulus package, nearly $1 trillion, that he could pretty much guarantee that unemployment wouldn't rise above 8%. Well, we're currently at 9%. Now, what's a percentage point? Am I right? Just a few million people. That's all. Next on the list, my personal favorite, ramming Obamacare down America's throats. Now, we had, until Obama was elected, we had the best health care system in the world. Yeah, it wasn't perfect. It was the best in the world. Citizens from countries across the globe would fly here, walk, crawl, however they could get here, to receive medical attention. Hey, people come from Canada, where the health care is free, to pay cash for services here in the United States. That's how good our health care system was. And yet Obama has pretty much gutted that. He's dumbed it down. And for what? For the people? So that you and I can enjoy a utopian-style health care system. How many of the folks in this chat room right now, the people hearing my voice, ever visited a VA hospital? I know there are a couple. Is that what you want? Is that the style of health care you want? Because I don't. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Voice your opinion. What do you think? Is Obama the worst president in the United States of America? I can, because I'm going to continue the list. Oh, another pet peeve of mine. Obama, bowing. Bowing to other world leaders. When does the president of the United States of America bow down to any world leader? When does that ever occur? I can tell you it happened once. In my lifetime that I'm aware of. And if you can cite a time where another president bowed down, deep bowed, as if he saw something on the guy's shoes and he was trying to lick it off. President Nixon bowed when visiting the leader of China in the 70s, just once. He's the only president that I know of who's ever bowed when visiting a leader, and it certainly wasn't the type of bow where you got down on your hands and knees and licked the guy's boots like Obama does every single time. Hell, Obama bows to other world leaders even when it's not protocol, even when it's not called for. When does a United States of America president bow down to another world leader? It's shameful. It's embarrassing. It's disgraceful. It's a whole lot of stuff that's really, really bad and embarrassing. We are still the United States of America. We are still the greatest country on the face of the earth, are we not? Where is the pride? Obama is as arrogant and cocky as they come, which is why I don't understand the bowing and scraping. I mean, do you? If you have such an arrogant, cocky president in the White House, and he's bowing and scraping and butt and boot licking, how do you reconcile that? I mean, I'm very much like my guy Alan West right now. I mean, Alan said that he just simply can't stand the guy. And I couldn't agree more. I can't stand the guy. I can't stand bowing and scraping, boot licking, butt kissing Barack Hussein Obama. I just can't do it. Check it out.
See, our government wants to castigate us as the enemy. Our president went down and said that the problem is here in the United States of America. Well, you know, let's face it, wherever he goes, he's going to apologize for this country. I can't stand the guy. I absolutely can't.
Since when does a president of the United States go around apologizing for the United States of America being the United States of America. It, that alone, those acts alone, oh, come on. This guy deserves a one-way ticket back to Indonesia, Hawaii, Chicago, wherever the hell he's from. He needs a one-way ticket back there just for that alone. I submit that when Barack Obama goes around to other countries bowing and scraping and apologizing for the United States of America, that millions of Americans are deeply embarrassed. I know I am. Okay, because there's one thing worse than being an ugly American, and that's being a kiss-ass American. I mean, what would you rather be to another country? The ugly American or the ass-kissing American? And have your ass-kissing, boot-licking, butt-kissing, bowing and scraping president going to other countries, apologizing for the United States of America being the United States of America, apologizing for no real reason, and bowing and bootlicking. Doing that goes against everything the United States of America stands for. Everything. It's an embarrassment. I happen to have on good authority that China laughs at Obama. They think he is an idiot. And that's just not my opinion. That's the word I'm getting. Was Obama born in Kenya or Hawaii? No real proof has been presented, except the long form, brand new style birth certificate. But who cares, really? It doesn't really matter where he was born. Quite frankly, I don't give a damn where he was born. I don't care. I only care that he's a horrible president. He could be born on the moon for all I care. Haiti, the Haitian earthquake. Obama promised Haiti support, and a year later, 1 million people are still homeless. All right, we have a caller on the line, 772. You're on the air with the Dr. C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Program. Talk to me.
How you doing, Robert? This is Tesler.
Hey, Tesler. How are you?
Very good. You know, you ask a question, is Obama the worst president ever? And that's sort of like asking, is the glass half full or half empty?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it depends on your political perspective. Clearly, the far left don't like him, but they do like him, because at least he's advanced their agenda to some degree. The central left, if there is such a thing, they love this guy. They think he is the best president. And, of course, when you start getting to the right, to the middle and to the right, it becomes really questionable. If you can objectively look at this man as advancing the cause of American interest throughout the world, if that's the criteria, then he is clearly the worst president we have ever had, including Jimmy Carter, which is really saying something.
Indeed.
And so, well, you know, he's a divided opinion. Like everything else he does, he divides. It'll never be agreed upon that he was a good president. I cannot see that in history. I cannot see that. He's the most divisive man, the most racially divisive, most class divisive president we have ever had. Never before have we talked to him, at least in the last, since before him, have we talked about racism and class warfare like we've talked with this guy as president. That's no accident. I'm sorry, I got on my soapbox there.
You're absolutely right, Tesler. I tell you what, he sold America a complete bill of goods. He's played us all for fools. Well, certainly not me, and certainly not you, because I happen to believe, you know, I knew what the deal was when he was campaigning. You know, anybody who wanted to see could see. The emperor was buck naked. He had no clothes.
Yep.
But there are people out there who thought, well, after 8 years of George Bush, you know, we really, you know, even though the guy is like really short on facts and substance and, you know, all those things that we really, really need to hear, you know, he's at least he's talking about hope and change. But he wasn't very specific about what type of hope, what type of change he was going to put into effect. And he's just sold us all a bunch of crap. He has divided the nation to such an extent where there's actually talk of other states seceding from the Union as a result of his election. Now, I guess, you know, we could say, okay, well, there's at least one parallel that he might have with President Lincoln, since he's going around touting the relationship between the two, the significant relationship between his style or his presidency and Lincoln's presidency. There are states talking about seceding. There are citizens saying that this guy's divisive. He's engaging in class warfare. I can't quite put a handle on what his true agenda is for America. I'm really trying hard. What does this guy want, Tesler?
Well, first of all, let's address the Lincoln issue for a second. Now, Lincoln came into the presidency historically with a nation that really, in effect, had already been divided. The question of slavery had already divided the states. So he came into it that way. Now, the difference there is Obama has come into a presidency in which I honestly thought the races were actually getting along better. We didn't think so much in terms of race. Maybe some segments of both the white and the black population still do and always will. But I thought in many respects that had started to come behind us. Get behind us, I should say. But he's brought it to the surface. And all of a sudden now, you know, you start questioning, you know, what is going on? I mean, are we back in affirmative action in the worst possible way? In all honesty, I do believe that this president and his agenda is not a mystery to anybody. I know it's hard for folks to accept, but the man is a black liberation theology follower. If you accept that premise, then everything else he does falls into place, including the people he surrounds himself with. I mean, if you accept it, and if you understand what black liberation theology is all about, and I know you do, okay, then what he does is a polished version of Jeremiah Wright.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, Tesler. What is going on with this president is he is destroying America from the ground up in terms of unity. I mean, the president is supposed to unify the country, or at least make an effort to do so. In order for him to, I believe his strategy for winning re-election is to divide America, to divide us, and the rich people against the people who don't have money, the haves and the have-nots. I just don't understand. I mean, okay, if you go with the premise that Barack Obama is a version of Jeremiah Wright, and we do, what is he attempting to accomplish for the American people? Is it true socialism? Is it Marxism? Is it bringing about an American or socialist utopia? Or is it about does he truly believe that he is helping to usher in a new era in America where we're all just real nice and happy and everything's real groovy?
No, it's not a socialist utopia. That's where I think many people who presume that about Obama are off base. What Obama is trying to do is right the wrongs of colonialism. He's trying to right the wrongs of the white man having taken over his country, of the white Western empires, including the United Kingdom and America, mm-hmm. having taken money away from and subjugating people. See, if you accept the Black Liberation Theology premise, then what Obama is trying to do that he thinks makes it a better America is level the playing field, taking money away from rich people that they don't deserve and giving it back to poor people who it was stolen from over the years. It's sort of like, what do they call that? What, reparations.
Yeah.
If you accept the premise of reparations, okay, and many people advance a theory that we should that the United States owes reparations to black folks because of slavery. Okay, if you look at it through that prism, then what he does begins to make sense.
Do you think he'll win re-election? What do you think his chances are?
Boy, you know, that's got to be one of the toughest calls so far out. It not only depends on who runs against him, but it depends on how that person presents the case against Obama. That is what the 2012 election is going to be about, almost like a courtroom. You know, who's got the better case? Who can present the better evidence? And who can sway the jury of American voters? And whoever can do that, that's going to be the winner. Now, will Obama be able to claim credit for things he didn't do? Of course he will. Just look at Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Is that the nature of politics? Of course it is. I honestly think who makes the best case, you know, Donald Trump, and I know he's discredited and he's not running, but in many respects he knows how to make a good case. He knows how to he knew how to frame the issues. That's what's important. You've got to get Obama talking about our issues, not his issues. Because if he talks about his issues, he wins. That's how I look at it.
What I find interesting, Tesla, is that anyone who gets on the airwaves and speaks to the American people plainly, to the point, and honestly, their poll numbers skyrocket.
Yes.
Their Americans listen.
Yes.
And you're exactly right when you state that the candidate who goes against Barack Obama needs to do just that. They need to follow the blueprint, in my mind, to a certain extent, of Chris Christie, Marco
mm-hmm.
Rubio,
yep.
and even
yep.
Donald Trump.
Yes, absolutely.
And
that's correct.
Speak to America plainly, because you know what? We respect that and we understand it. You know, but people are beginning to realize that Barack Obama is a con artist. He is nothing more than your standard everyday politician. He is not an earnest agent of change and a new way of doing things in politics and in Washington. He is your standard down and dirty Chicago style politician, and folks are beginning to see that. And he thoroughly enjoyed a 60% approval rating last week before that, and now it's gone down.
Yep. And it will continue to go down, because here's what's going on, I feel anyway, for this election. All of us, many of us, are concerned with the social issues of our time. We are concerned with the abortionist in chief, Barack Obama. We are concerned with the person who wants to, you know, who just essentially is not a Christian in the White House. I don't know what you want to call him, but he's no Christian. Now, these social issues are important to a lot of people, and with Huckabee pulling out of the race, the social the social conservatives, their vote is up for grabs. However, on the vast majority of Americans, the economic issue is what's going to reign. People vote with their pocketbooks, period. They always have, generally, at least in modern times, and generally always will. Now, if the case can be made that you're worse off now economically under Barack Obama than you were 4 years ago, the Republican wins. If Barack can go ahead.
No, and I heard something to that effect earlier today on Fox News, that the candidate who runs against Obama needs to come up with that scenario, in order to make a convincing case to the American public why Barack Obama needs to be sent home at the end of 2012. So yes, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
Go on.
People still believe that America is the land of milk and honey. People still believe that. I believe it. And I want prosperity for this country. I don't want sacrifice. We're supposedly not in a major war. And so as a result, there's got to be some kind of positive feeling out there again that we can come back and be the land of milk and honey again. Enjoy prosperity, go to Mars if necessary, and enjoy the fruits of that endeavor all across the board. That ultimately, as it's been shown, that the space program was one of the great scientific projects of all mankind, benefited Americans and people all around the world, even indirectly. But yet Obama does away with it. Now, if that's not negativity, and I don't know what is.
You're exactly right. One of the oil executives whose name escapes me at this moment responded to one of the congressmen that Americans don't want shared sacrifice, and I'm paraphrasing. They would much prefer shared prosperity. And
that's exactly correct.
Yes, and what a wonderful slogan that would have been or would be for a presidential candidate on the Republican side. And of course, he has to mean it, but it would be great if we had a Republican candidate who will send that message home, who'll bring it home and talk about it all the time, because that's exactly what America is really all about, not about sacrifice. And shared sacrifice, that brings to mind communist Russia. That brings to mind Cuba. That brings to mind Venezuela. No. Republicans should have seized on that shared sacrifice crap that Obama threw out there long ago. And it took an oil executive to throw that out there. No, I don't know where he got it from, but it's exactly right. It's what America's really all about and has always been about: prosperity.
Well, that's right. You see, look, I work for a software company. Now, my software company I work for does well, and we have been over the years, thankfully, in spite of Obama, not because of him. I get pay raises. I get bonuses. I enjoy the fruits of my labor because the company I work for is doing well or doing better. Now, that's shared prosperity. That's what he's talking about. And so when we have a good economy and all companies do as well as the one I work for, then everybody benefits. Everybody gets a little bit more of the pie. Everybody can say, well, now I have this. Yeah, perhaps we purchase things we shouldn't or we don't really need in that shared prosperity. But ladies and gentlemen, that's America. I'm sorry. I'm not embarrassed by that. Are we spoiled? Sure. Are we spoiled to the point where we don't appreciate this country? I have to say yes to that as well.
Yeah. When I hear the term or the slogan shared sacrifice, I'm hearing I've got $5 and I've got to give you $2.50, and the government's going to make me do it. Just because somebody else doesn't have any at all, and you know what, that's really good if I decide that that's what I want to do, but you know, the government forcing me to do something I don't want to do, based on redistribution of wealth is not my idea of a good time. And that's what I believe Obama means by shared sacrifice. And I think he means certainly he means those people making over $250,000 a year sacrificing to make up for those who don't have anything. I just wonder why it's taking so long for the majority of Americans to wake up and smell the coffee. This guy has no idea how America really works. I mean, what brings Americans together? He won re-election, in my opinion. He won election, in my opinion, on a fluke. He got away. He pulled one over on the American people. It would be interesting to see if he can do the same thing this time around. If the American people will fall for his con game.
Well, here's what I think the problem is. You know, we're calling it a con game because most red conservatives, R-E-A-D, red conservatives, conservatives that read about things mm-hmm. and form opinions, we understand why Obama is such an abomination to the American way of life. Why? Because if we didn't study our civics in grammar school and high school, we got to learn them afterwards. We understand about the balance of power. We have... These people are, you know, people we talk to have some concept of the Constitution. The reason why I think Obama is able to fool America, or too many Americans, is because, I'm sorry, education has failed them.
Yeah.
They don't understand how much of a socialist this man is. They don't understand about the Constitution. They don't understand that regulatory agencies don't make laws in place of the legislature. And so, therefore, that's why he can do that. He is counting on the ignorance, and that's a strong word, let's just say the lack of knowledge on many Americans to get his agenda across. They need that. Socialists need that to create class warfare as well. They need ignorant people.
Yes. And that's why I believe that Obama continuously goes for the youth vote.
Yes, absolutely.
Because adults, people who have lived 50 years, older people, we understand that hope, change, win the future, it doesn't mean anything. There's no meaning behind it. What do you mean by win the future? What do you mean by
right.
hope? What do you mean by change?
Right.
What does it mean? You know, younger people, for the most part, aren't going to ask those questions. A lot will, because we do have some smart people out there, both Democrat mm-hmm. and Republican. But he is going after the youth vote, the YouTube vote, the Facebook vote, the MySpace vote, because those people aren't going to ask those questions. They're idealistic, and it's all about, yes, well, Obama's all about hope and change, and I'm really interested in that. And they'll never ask what that means.
Right. let me put it to you this way, in a historical perspective, which I think you as a professional historian, you know, might appreciate it, and I don't think I'm off base on this.
Mm-hmm.
The folks who the men and women who served in World War II are called the greatest generation, and that's what they're called, and rightfully so.
Yep.
And many of us now are either the sons and daughters of the greatest generation, or we're the grandsons and granddaughters of the greatest generation. But who is voting now for Obama? Yet another generation removed from the greatest generation, two generations removed. And the further away you get from that generation, the more folks, I think, are willing to support Obama, because they have never seen nor heard of what happened when we had to fight true totalitarianism, true fascism, and true socialism like Italy in its purest, worst state. So people are forgetting this, and they don't know it, and they have not learned it. The history of what this country has gone through has not been passed down to the very people who now support Obama, the youngsters.
That's exactly right. We have another call on the line. Stay with us, Tesler 616. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hey, Doc Tesler. It's cool, Mike.
Hey, Mike. I should have recognized the area code. I am so sorry. Welcome to the show.
I could have told you that. I could have told you that when you told me the area code.
Ah, okay. All right.
Well, Tesler, go ahead and finish. I was really enjoying hearing you talk about what you were talking about.
Really, the summation of it is, too, and, you know, for example, Mike, if you take the folks who are in your cafe or the ones who, you know, I'm familiar with, if you take a look at them, they are two and three generations removed from the greatest generation. And it's important for each of them to learn and understand, even if they haven't done it in high school or college, what is necessary, what it is about this country that that makes it so singular in all the world, that the concept of American exceptionalism is what has carried us forward since World War II. And that concept is being destroyed by Barack Obama. First you define American exceptionalism, and then you realize how Barack Obama is destroying it. Then you begin to understand how non-American this president is.
Well, that's exactly right. What do you have to add to that, Mike?
Ditto.
Well said. Well said. Ditto. Ditto. All right.
I don't think even if I disagreed that... If I was a big Obama supporter, I'm not sure that I could put up a good, at least a reasonable argument. Because what Tesler is saying is basic. It's so factual that basically in order to win a debate, you would have to change the topic into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just can't argue those points. Or you can't debate those points that he's incorrect.
To this point, we have skyrocketing gas prices, food prices and everything else we pay for, every other good and services goes up quite a bit. I can't put a precise number on it, but it's going up every single day. Now we hear that the government is mandating the use of a specific type of light bulb, which will cost us $50.
I saw it.
Can somebody say bootleg light bulbs? Because
I'm going down to Walmart. I'm going to stock up on them, baby.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly
then
right.
I'm going to sell them on eBay for twice.
Exactly. I recommend that we all go down and stock up on those regular standard light bulbs because I can't imagine anybody paying $50 for a light bulb. I had to make sure, Tesler and Mike, that I knew exactly that was exactly true. And I have found out, I went through some government contacts down at the Pentagon and asked if it was true. Because they'll be the first ones to start using them, from what I hear. And they said yes. My contact said yes, this is exactly true. We have another call on the line, 508. Stay on, Mike and Tesler. 508, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I heard you. Are you still on the oil topic?
Yes, we are.
I want to just try and stay on topic. The issue here is, and I know that your premise is basically we don't want to point fingers at the speculators.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that's where the real blame does lie. Okay.
How so?
Well, we know that according to the Financial Times, which I read often. We are at a 10-year high in domestic oil production. So this is not a supply and demand issue on the reason why gas and oil is going absolutely through the roof. And it, actually, if you paid attention to the stock market and the recent increase in the margins with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, as soon as they increase the margins, which is essentially a down payment that the investors pay, it started going down. It got the hedge fund managers out of the market,
mm-hmm.
and left the real speculators in, like the trucking companies, the airline guys. Those are the guys that are the speculators that belong in the speculation market, not your hedge funds and your Goldman Sachs. Those guys don't belong in oil whatsoever, and they're the ones who are driving up the price. So really the blame lies, because if you've noticed, the oil for the past, what, maybe a week and a half has been dropping steadily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like the you know, we've increased production of oil in the past week and a half. There's no other reason why for it to drop off the face of the planet the way it has.
So for those of us who are not as well-versed in these matters,
mm-hmm.
And correct me here, is it that an oil speculator or a group of speculators say that, well, we believe that oil prices are going to shoot up to this, that, this number or that number, and
uh-huh.
then because they said that, the price goes up?
Basically, it's on the futures market.
Okay.
So, you know, the price of a barrel of oil today, what it's being traded at today, is actually what the contract is for the next month and a half or so. The best way to actually get rid of, if you want to see oil drop to like $20 or $30 a barrel,
mm-hmm.
get these investors that are betting on these barrels of oil to actually take possession of the product. Because you know for a fact that none of them are willing to take, you know, 1,000 barrels of oil and put it in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get all the speculators out of the market, and you'll drive down the cost of a barrel of oil immediately. Because unfortunately, the conservatives have consistently said it's a supply issue. We need to drill more. You got Anwar. We got a lot of oil out there, and Barack Obama's not letting us get it. But the facts don't weigh that way. We are at a 10-year high in domestic oil production. So there's no
okay.
way that our domestic oil production is affecting the market at all.
So, well, let me ask you this. How do we how do we resolve this? What needs to happen in order for this to be resolved? If it's not a supply and demand issue, if it's simply a situation where you have speculators
and stuff, right? What we need to do is get the Goldman Sachs, the J.P. Morgan, out of the commodities, out of oil. Get them out. Make it completely illegal for them to bet on it. There's no reason for them to do that. There's no reason for them to be even in that market. You know,
why are they in the market?
Because what it does is it increases their profit. It increases their portfolios. It's more of a bumper for when, say, a Walmart stock takes a nosedive. So they have something in their portfolio to kind of subsidize their own portfolio.
Is it legal?
What's that?
Is it legal for them
Absolutely
to do that?
Absolutely, it's legal. It's legal. That's why they can do it right now. But we can make it, as a government, we can make it illegal for those types of people to be in the market. Essentially, it'd be like having, in the banking industry, reinstalling the name of the bill's actually escaping me right now. It was that firewall between banking and investment houses.
Well, but that's all we really need right now is the government telling a free market company or entity that they can't be free market anymore, that they'll have to stop.
It's been that way, though. The derivative market itself was regulated, and in fact, it was illegal to be in the derivatives market all the way up until Reagan. And then Reagan came in and just completely deregulated it, and we know what happened with the derivatives market in the past financial meltdown. Derivatives
Tesla?
Went through the roof to $4 trillion or quadrillion dollars. It's an amazing number, and it's all fake, fabricated money.
Tesla, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I have a question for that caller. What's his name
Chris.
Again? I'm sorry. Chris?
Ray.
I'm sorry, Ray. Are you
yep.
a Ron Paul supporter?
I support him on certain aspects, yes.
Okay,
I support him on the Fed. I support him there. I support him on his foreign policy.
Okay, I just kind of... Yeah, you support him on the Fed. That's what I kind of figured. Okay, yeah, that's... Because I have to say, your comments are spoken like a true Ron Paul supporter. Every Ron Paul person I've ever known has stated exactly the same thing.
Actually, I consider myself a Teddy Roosevelt progressive. Because I'm very liberal, and I believe in that there's a a position for government where government can help and can be of help to a lot of people. But I'm also a Second Amendment guy where I'm very strong on my Second Amendment rights. So I consider myself, I'm a Teddy Roosevelt. I believe in the regulation of the market, because laissez-faire market does not work. And what it does, it drives down the wages of the American people. It allows the corporation, the multi-corporations, to continually drum down our economy and our wages. And one of the talking points of the right that really hits home for me is they say the very wealthy and the corporations are the job creators. They are not the job creators. The job creators are you and I, people who make a paycheck, because we go out and we spend our money. And when we spend our money, that spurs demand in the market. And that forces the small business or the large business to increase their employees, because they're not going to hire one person if there's no demand in the market whatsoever. We'll take it for an example, an example. If I own a store where I sell tires and I'm only selling tires, 100 tires a day, I'm not going to hire any more. I'm not going to hire one more person than it takes to actually satisfy the demand, no matter how low my taxes are. It doesn't make sense. It's not a generosity thing where I hire people. I hire people based on demand. So really, the job creator is you and I in the middle class, not the very wealthy. The wealthy are the.
Well, again, I'm going to disagree with you to some degree, and I'm very glad I was able to get it out that you're really a Ron Paul supporter. And I kind of figured that there was something there just by listening to you talk. Let me get something straight. Okay, big businesses do create jobs. I do believe that. But more importantly, when you consider the backbone of the American business center is our small businesses, like the one I work for, and you accumulate them, they are the ones that create the jobs. Why? Sure. Yeah. They're able to make a product and sell it, but people will not buy it if the socialist government is taking their taxes or making it so difficult for them to live with high gasoline prices. What we're talking about essentially is two categories of income. We're talking about basic income you need in order to pay your bills, pay the heat, pay the phone, and just pay the gas to get in the car to go to work.
Right.
Then you're talking about a second category of income called discretionary income.
Right.
And the more profitable our times, the more discretionary income people have. Now, it's that discretionary income that we have that helps to buy things that helps fuel the economy beyond all proportion.
Exactly. And that small business that you work for, they will lay you off if demand drops off to a certain point. And they will hire two or three more people if demand increases.
I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Right. Demand goes up and down, but demand is relative to the supply and demand of labor in the market. So right now we have a recession, right? So labor is plentiful, so wages are lower. When the labor market becomes a little tighter and the ability for a business to find, good laborers, good workers, essentially what happens is your wages go up. Now, what happened also is with the free trade, that kind of put a knife in the back of the American worker. Now we're competing with people in China. When we compete with people in China and the Chinese government, who pretty much their smog index you can cut with a knife, we're competing against that. We can't, unless you're willing to live in a country like China with no regulations and with wages at like $3 a day.
No, so when I'm willing to live in a country. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Bottom line is a good wage increases demand, and when you increase demand, you expand the economy, and your small business and your large business, both of them, will begin to hire again, because they're not going to hire on goodwill.
Okay, except for one little thing. Excuse me. When you sell a software product, most software products are not necessary in order for me to live.
Right.
The software you buy, I buy, I don't need it. I don't need it to live in most instances. Now, you may need it for your job, but we're just talking about the general average person. Now, If gasoline goes to $7 a gallon, if bread goes to $4 a loaf, and from what I understand it may be in some places, okay, I'm not going to spend money on software I don't need because I'm going to eat that bread and buy that gasoline first. Now, why don't I have enough money to buy the discretionary things in my life to fuel the economy? Well, for example, you made a reference to competing with China. Well, one of the reasons why we don't buy American anymore is because the labor unions have priced us out of the marketplace with $20, $30, $40 an hour workers who shouldn't be paying one half of that much.
Our unions have caused
this issue.
Hey, hold on just one minute. We have another caller, 317. I just want to go ahead and acknowledge the caller. Caller, you have anything to add to this subject?
Hello, fellas. Steve from Indianapolis. Yeah, I have a comment. Well, the thing about it is even with free trade, we don't get any price drops when they import the products in from China. They still charge a high price for what we import, especially oil.
Yes.
So just because we're importing from China and they're getting paid $3 a day doesn't mean it's going to help me when I get ready to go buy the price for it. We might as well make it here if I'm going to pay a high price.
Absolutely.
So, what it is it's making the rich richer when they import it from China, but we still pay the high price. Because if that was the case, when they make that oil over there and they import it, why is it hitting us so hard? And why is the Environmental Protection Agency blocking oil from Alaska, causing us to not be able to produce oil jobs here? You know, I have a lot of problems with Obama.
Well, the bottom line is, again, I'm going to reiterate what I said. Oil production's at a 10-year high. We haven't had more oil production in this country for the last 10 years. More than, the entire decade, the 8 years of George W. Bush. The second thing is, talking about unions, I mean, you want to blame unions for the leaving of our jobs, really. The real problem is the greedy capitalist, corporate capitalist, ultra-capitalist. Because I'm going to give you an example. Coach, the guys who make the little $1,000 purses, they're manufacturing in China. Just out on the Financial Times. What's that?
We know that. That's how they can afford to make these products so low and sell them so high.
Let me finish my point.
I'm sorry,
go ahead. They don't have unions in China.
All right, go ahead, caller. Tesla probably dropped off.
Oh, okay, no, I'm right here. I'm listening to them. Yeah, but yeah, I understand what they're saying about the profits and of the rich people, different things of that nature. But one thing about it is, it's one thing to have free trade, but it's another thing to have fair trade.
Right.
You know, if employment's at full capacity, then we can import products. But if we got 15 million people looking for jobs. And, then we have a problem with this import system. So, see, in the 90s, they try to, the economy is doing so great now. What's wrong with free trade? Well, the economy is not doing so great now. So what's your comment about that?
Was that a question for me?
Yeah. I mean, anybody.
Okay. Well, the bottom line is the free trade thing. The right wing likes to, the conservatives like to blame unions and high wages on the reason for our factories to move overseas. Going back to my original comment about Coach and the Coach bags, they were manufacturing in China, but just coming out of Financial Times now, they just had a meeting with a bunch of big CEOs and investors. The CEO actually said that they are moving to Vietnam, they're going to be moving to India and the Philippines. And the reason for that is they are lower wage economies than China. Think about that. In China, they're probably making $10 a day in the factory. They're selling purses for $1,200 a piece. That's too much for these corporations. They want more. And it's going to be off the backs. Rather than hurt the shareholder and their dividend check to go down, you're going to hurt the worker, the factory guy, the guy who's putting their blood, sweat, and tears on the factory floor. Kind of like the guys that make the iPod, where they, at their factory, they're putting nets underneath the windows so when they jump out, they can be caught so they don't commit suicide. They're signing suicide pacts in those factories, in the iPod factory, that says, I promise that I won't commit suicide. That's the type of country and the corporations that we're buying from in this country because of our free trade agreement. That's what needs to change. And both liberals.
Yeah, and it's not even free trade.
No,
it's not even free trade. Like the seniors, they won't allow them to buy prescription drugs from Canada. How is that free trade? That is not free trade. If you can't buy prescription drugs from anywhere in the world, like Europeans pay half the price of what Americans pay, Canadians pay a lot cheaper prices than Americans, how is that free trade? That is not free trade.
No.
So it was an economic system built to deindustrialize America. Because this is the thing, even if the Republicans get in office, like if I would like to cut the federal budget in half and eliminate the income tax. Even if we do that, and there's a lot of spending and growth in the economy, how can we produce jobs when your people are at Walmart buying products that we don't even make here?
Right.
See, they keep talking about this service economy and all these things. We're going to stimulate the economy, and that's probably why the biggest reason that Obama didn't work, because you're stimulating an economy that buys from overseas. You give money to people. People go spend it at Walmart. They buy it from overseas. That's what I'm saying. So it's very hard. You have to fix the American economy. You pretty much have to stimulate the entire global economy, because that's really how it works.
Right.
They think, oh, we're just going to cut taxes. We're going to eliminate the income tax. We're going to go Ron Paul freedom system, and we're going to be fine. Well, not necessarily, because even though if you don't have an income tax, if you're still buying at Walmart, that doesn't produce American jobs.
Right.
People don't seem to understand the global economy. We own a global system. They don't get it. They think we can do some 1965 tax cuts and we're going to be good to go. And it's not going to be that simple.
No, it's not. We've had these tax cuts for the last 10 years now, and yet we're still mired in the same recession that we were 2 years ago. It hasn't stimulated the economy. Because I don't know, it doesn't matter how low a corporate tax is or how low a business tax is, they're not going to hire unless you have money. Now, I will say to you right now that the taxes that should be going down are your local sales taxes, your local, your personal paycheck taxes. Those taxes put more money in your wallet for you to spend in the economy.
Yeah, but this is the thing. That's what I was just saying. You spend that money in the economy on products that are made from China. Unless you're buying an automobile from General Motors, when you go to Walmart, let's say they eliminated all income taxes, and you got $300 extra this week. If you go buy a TV that's made in Japan, that didn't benefit. That's not going to create American jobs.
No,
people are not getting it. They don't understand that we were built because of General Motors. That's what they, General Motors, RCA, American-made products. But unless you're buying an automobile, we really don't make much in this country anymore. So that's the thing. And you can get the extra money, but who's going to get employed?
Right.
You're going to be employing the guys in Japan.
That's the problem. We need to start reforming our free trade. And the Democrats, I know I'm talking to a conservative show, but the Democrats actually have a bill going through is the Made in America agenda, where they're pushing for Made in America stuff to come back. They're going to get rid of loopholes that allow corporations to get tax breaks to help them move corporations overseas. They're going to give them tax breaks to move back here. They're going to do a whole bunch of other stuff, plus infrastructure with American-made goods. They want to build, new infrastructure and only use American steel. They want to use, American bolts, rivets. I mean, everything. They want to use it all American because That's the way you're going to get the economy going again, is if you rebuild our infrastructure with American stuff. Don't buy cheap Chinese drywall that's going to end up giving you asthma in 25 years. Don't buy Chinese steel where all they did was melt it down and resell it back to us a lot weaker. That's what the Democrats.
Oh, so you're a Democrat? Are you a Democrat or?
I'm a registered Democrat, but I'm very progressive. I'm a very progressive.
Okay, well, I have a very good question for you because I think a lot of people don't understand this.
Sure.
Okay, we have a super large budget deficit, right?
Right.
And it could end up crashing the American dollar to the point where we can lose 25% of our standard of living.
Right.
Because of the fact that when you're devaluing the currency, see, all the world's gold is $6 trillion. See, I think this is what happened. Instead of reinvesting the money back into the economy, the super rich have been investing in gold. All the world's gold is like valued at $6 trillion. So instead of that money stimulating the economy, they're buying gold. So we really need to stop devaluing the currency. So that gives people an incentive that, hey, we're not going to print more money. We're just going to reform the system. And that way businesses will have confidence to reinvest back into small business. Right now they're like, hey, let's just buy gold and sit on it because I don't know what the hell Obama's doing. That's pretty much their attitude. And
well,
that $6 trillion could have produced a lot of jobs in the global economy.
Absolutely. And the other thing is a lot of these big corporations, if you watch like CNBC and a lot of the business news, they're sitting on – the big corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars. They're not investing it in commodities. They're not investing it in – they're not even investing it in themselves. They're just sitting on it.
Yeah,
they need
that's
to
exactly
try
right.
And grab that money that they're holding on to and grab it and yank it back down into this economy. That's what we need to do, and we do that by demanding higher wages and doing stuff like that. And the other thing is talking about GM is a lot of their factories, they moved to Canada. Now, if taxes are an issue, we're almost equal to Canada on the taxation issue. They moved to Canada because they don't have to pay health insurance. That's the other thing. A GM factory worker in Canada is covered by the universal health care system. So GM takes that whole thing that's dangling over their head, that whole cost that's dangling over their head in Detroit, and they get rid of it by moving to China, by moving to Canada.
Oh, well, the healthcare system.
Hold on a minute.
Go ahead.
Hold on a second. Mike, I haven't heard you speak here. Do you have anything to add to this subject matter? Go ahead.
First and foremost, this is my first. I don't know that I've ever disagreed with Tesla, but I will here. It's he's been brainwashed by the idea that somehow the labor unions are responsible when they're pulling out of China now to go to Ecuador because China's cost of living is too high. I think we really know labor unions had very little. Going into the millions suffered under corporate slavery with health problems, death, and PG&E, which poisoned the water, which people like George W. Bush and his Gestapo dad never really cared. It was just tough shit. Be honored that this company's in America, die. And that is their attitude. And unions came in and gave people protection. Nothing is wrong with that. And the bottom line is that Republicans don't even acknowledge there was ever a need for labor. Never. Or for organization labor. Never. Because the bottom line is they've never valued people. This government doesn't even value its soldiers when they came home for Gulf War syndrome or Agent Orange. They never cared. So people in general need a organized labor group in order to protect them from who? The same people that are now moving out of China and going to Ecuador. On top of, as far as the economy, I mean, the World Trade Organization, America sold itself out. We allowed the World Trade Organization. We didn't argue with Clinton to do that. And the bottom line is we are so overregulated and the individual who's a progressive, if we don't get our butt in gear and protect our amendment rights from the Constitution, it doesn't matter what companies are in there. You have Maxine Waters talking about nationalizing them. So it is irrelevant. The only answer for all of these problems that Tesla has, that Dr. Jones has, that the Steve from Indiana has, we need to take our country back. Not worry about this billion-dollar corporation. Once we take our country back under the Constitution and we regulate government, then
Tesla?
We can get things in order. But we can't do anything until we get our country back.
Yeah, you got a good point there. Because I really think it's a global conspiracy, really. To have all these problems happening at the same time, I think there's too many coincidences happening at the same time. And so maybe they're trying to crash the system to bring in that new world order.
You guys got to listen to Tesla's show, Socialism is Not an Option. It's on Sundays at 4. There is no more educational program than that program on any network.
Oh, what a shameless plug for Tesla's radio show.
You're educated, but you're very opinionated too. Tesla lays it out there Sunday. He laid out statistics that are like, and he did the week before. But I mean, it doesn't really matter what party you belong to. If you listen to his show, anyone can call in. But his facts are undeniable facts. They're, whether we like them or not, whether we agree or disagree, it's a factual type show, which shows this is why this is happening. And it doesn't matter the topic, whether it's manufacturing or abortion, it lays it out there. There's not made up stats.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I wanted to respond to health care. I think he asked me earlier, health care, what about the health care system?
About Canada,
General Motors.
He said he mentioned
GM
went to Canada.
Yeah, our health care system is fraudulent from the very foundation of orthodox medicine, which was probably 150 years ago. If you look at Japan and other countries around the world, they spend one third per person on healthcare that we spend. We have $2 trillion healthcare system. They don't spend as much money. They focus on diet, exercise. We have high fructose corn syrup, aspartame, MSG. We're taking prescription drugs. We consume half the drugs in all the world. But we got countries living 15 years older than the average American that dies at 70. This country's living to be 85, and they spend way less on health care because they take care of themselves. So I think what it is was that the pharmaceutical companies got in bed with the federal government and said, you know, you guys pass Medicaid and Medicare, we'll have guaranteed government contracts for profits through the funnel of the government. And then they grew the system over time to the point where it's going to collapse. Because, see, other governments don't have this problem. It's just our government because of the fact that we had the nanny state, all these technology advances. Like 99% of people die through chemotherapy anyway. So a lot of the things that we pay for, they do not work. When you cover high probability diabetes, heart disease, cancer, a lot of these things can be easily preventable. Situations, people eating the wrong diet, all the chemicals in the food supply, the quality of our water, infrastructure needs to be improved, the air quality is low.
Let me ask you this. A lot of what you talk about, a lot of what you just said is absolutely true, but a lot of our health issues are not just based on our environment or the types of foods we eat. A lot of it's just simply pure genetics. I mean, there are some things that we can do to lessen the effects of, say, for example, my parents, my mom and her dad had heart issues all their lives, high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke issues, that kind of thing, and it's passed down from generation to generation through our DNA, genetics rather, and there's really nothing we can really do about that except help to minimize what damage is done by taking certain steps to, you know, eat right and, you know, a lot of the things that you mentioned there, but a lot of it's out of our hands. And I do believe that other countries have their own issues with regard to their health. Americans simply, our mindset is that it doesn't matter whether you'll die, you know, tomorrow or 10 years from now. We're going to do whatever we can to try to prolong your life and give you quality of life. That's just something that's been ingrained in our medical system from day one,
right,
from what I can tell.
Exactly. Yeah, it's fraudulent. It's fraudulent. See, they always blame it on genetics. But I've gotten rid of, let me count on the one hand, gotten rid of asthma, hypertension. What else do I have? Adrenal fatigue. I've had a lot of issues. I remember when I first took, apple cider vinegar. I've done a lot of different holistic things and gotten rid of a lot of my health problems, and I've had the best health ever, just eating right. When I went on a low-carb diet, felt super great. I mean, the thing is, when you get outside of the country, you see how different systems work and how effective it is. See, if drugs were so effective, why are other countries living 15 years longer and spending way less money? We can't. It's unsustainable on the spending. You can't bankrupt your own nation wars and spending money on health care, because what's going to end up happening is your enemies are going to see you from afar, and they're going to start an arms race. They say America's weak right now. Let's go ahead and start an arms race and attack them. See, it's a national security risk. We can't bankrupt our own nation because people don't want to take care of themselves, or because we want to fight trillion-dollar wars that had nothing to do with 9/11. See, everything in our media is exaggerated. The media exaggerates everything.
All right, hold on. Let's let the next caller get in there and answer. Go on.
Oh, my question was for the one caller who Tesler asked if he supported Ron Paul. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. What would be an ideal, economic name a country we should be like? What? Because I'm almost getting the impression. Please correct me if I'm wrong. That I mean, you're leaning very heavily towards a socialist type socialist state. But correct me. What would be? We should be like what country?
No, I'm not a socialist.
No, wrong person.
Oh.
Wrong person. Not the
individual. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
All right. Hello.
Yeah. Okay, who are we talking to here?
Okay, this is Ray 508.
All right, go ahead,
sorry, Ray. I'm sorry. I'm not good with names.
that's all right. Well, you know, what I like is what America was, and that was back in the late 40s and 50s and 60s. Back then we had, you know, income equality, not inequality like we have today. We have, you know, the middle class was stronger. We had more money. The very, very wealthy weren't hoarding all the money. And essentially our manufacturing sector was very strong. And if I wanted to replicate another country, it would be our own country. It would be our country back in the 50s, back when the very wealthy were paying 85% top income. Would you call that socialist? Well, that's fine. You can. And I guess we were back in 1950 under the Republican Eisenhower. That's the case. That's what I want to go back to. Not to the days of free trade and deregulation that started in 1979, 1980 under Ronald Reagan. That we got to erase from our history and redo it.
Okay.
And go back directly back to the days of Eisenhower, you know, when we were a really strong country.
Okay, and I welcome you guys to join my show at 11:30. I'll post the link in the chat room. You guys are.
That's right.
It's been great. It's been great. Go ahead. Sorry for monopolizing Tesler's time.
All right, Tesla, do you want to throw in anything here before we cut out?
Well, you know, let me just address this, and this was something that Mike had said earlier, and I'll try and wrap this up quickly. I do not disagree with the concepts of the concept of unions as they existed way back then. They were necessary in light of what the corporations were doing to workers. Slave labor, underpaid, you know, using child labor, no rest, you know, things of this nature. But like the government, My position is the unions have abused their power, just like the government has, to a point where now these union workers are overpaid. Why are they, and because they are overpaid, because companies do not want to meet union demands, they need to you know, outsource manufacturing to places like China. Look,
but
if it wasn't
China.
Look,
whether
they're leaving China or not, the fact of the matter is it's cheap labor. And
exactly.
and you wouldn't have a Walmart if you didn't have cheap labor. I'm not done yet.
Okay.
Walmart could not exist if everything they did was by labor unions. If everything manufactured in the Walmart was manufactured with labor union help, then prices would not be cheaper.
I agree with Tesla.
There's no way on God's holy earth you'd have a Walmart with labor unions.
Let me point something out real quick. We would have a Walmart, even if it bought all union products. And the reason is because your personal income would be increased at the same time. See, the whole race to the bottom aspect that China has put upon us.
What'd you say, Tesla?
it's profits. See, they think they don't understand. It's profits. The prices hasn't changed.
Right.
They haven't gone down 90% because we import from China. Those prices are super high.
I actually buy Carhartt jackets. I work construction. And I bought a Carhartt jacket made in America for $75. You know what? That thing got ripped up, you know, in a couple of years. I went out, I bought another one. It was made in Mexico. Same price.
All right.
No difference.
Hey, all right. With that, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up because we have less than 3 minutes to go. And I want to talk about just a little bit about tomorrow's show because it's going to be really good. And it asks the question, is Obama really preparing for civil war? According to an obscure report in the European Times, Union Times, Russian military analysts are reporting to Prime Minister Putin that U.S. President Barack Obama has issued an order to his Northern Command's top leader, U.S. Air Force General Gene Renault, to begin immediately increasing his military forces to 1 million troops by January 30, 2012. In what these reports warn is an expected outbreak of civil war within the United States. What's that all about?
Are you just kidding? Are you dead serious?
No, dead serious.
Where is this at so I can look it up on the computer?
EUtimes.net.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, I believe it's going to happen. I've been talking about that for some years now, but I'm definitely calling in tomorrow because we're going to talk about this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about
that. I think civil war is going to happen. Some political party is going to end up dying off. There's always going to be an enemy. But I think that's part of the New World Order strategy, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. And the Bible probably will be fulfilling itself, but hopefully we can delay these things from happening. But if the bloodshed happens, then it is what it is.
No doubt, and we talk about Bible prophecy all the time. Let's tune in at 11:30 for GGT and Cool Mike. They have a great show coming on tonight. Later on tonight, if you can stay awake for it, I got to drink a lot of coffee in order just to keep awake for that late show. It's a late show. Everybody have a great night. Thank you so much for being here. What a great show. A lot of great callers, a lot of participation. I really do appreciate it. Thank y'all so much. Have a great night. I am out. Good night.
Good night.